Hello and welcome to this edition of Club Chronicles, our series of interviews with club members who have some particularly interesting or significant stories to tell, and today is no exception. I'm joined by our chairman, Dennis Wolfe. Welcome, Dennis.
Hi, Mary.
In most of these podcasts, we've been looking back at the development of the club, particularly recently with 150th anniversary celebrations. You, I know, have been very intimately involved with these over the past year. But as well as that, today I would like to focus a little more on the future, on other things. So let's get started. But first of all, a little bit about you. Are you a Cheltonian? Have you lived here all your life, or were you elsewhere?
So I was born here and lived here up until the mid-80s, but then I've worked in London, Bristol, various other places. But we came back to live in Cheltenham about 10 years ago.
Okay. Do you have a family here?
So my wife and I live here, and we've got a couple of dogs. We don't have children, but we have 11 nieces and nephews, some of which still live locally.
Oh, 11. You were a partner in Deloitte, I understand, for many years, and those of us who came to your talk on the UK budget were in no doubt of your experience and expertise in these areas. We enjoyed your insight into the budget. Are you still involved in any way with Deloitte or any other company?
No, I mean, obviously, I was at Deloitte for 25 years. For those who don't know, it's one of the big four accounting firms in the world, professional services firms. I was on the board for a decade. I had various leadership roles while I was there. But when I retired, obviously I remain in touch with former colleagues, and I do one or two things for the firm. But mainly I've been doing non-executive work since then.
Yes, the RNLI, I think
you're
very involved.
Yes, so I'm a senior independent at the RNLI. I've chaired some government expert committees until last year. Board of a university, and still have some advisory roles. I advise some, a large family office in London, and also some professional practices firms.
Wow. Well, we're very lucky that you have enough time to spend time with the new club. But how many years have you been a member?
Well, about 8 years, but I've been aware of the new club since the mid-80s. I mean, some people who were in the generation above me, my old boss was a member here. And I knew one of your sadly now deceased members, Chris Wiseman, who I think was also chairman. So I've sort of been aware of the new club for a very long time, but I only sought to join since we returned back to Cheltenham, and it was my plan to retire here.
And you do a bit of snooker here, I think?
Yes, so I've got some snooker chums, Rob Wright and Ian, of course, Ian McPherson and John Landau, and I play pretty regularly.
Well, it seems that you've been a chairman for a long time, but actually it's only about 6 or 7 months since you were appointed chairman at the last AGM. But what a time that's been, one way or another. Many members, I think, will rightly say that you have turned the club around from one that was thought to be failing, or even sinking completely, to what it is now, which is feels like a very confident club, a lovely place to be, and attracting many more members now.
Well, I'm glad people, if people feel that way, I'm glad, because that's the attention. Certainly it's true that the club, in common with many clubs, I guess, of long standing, have been run on a shoestring for many, many years, and in COVID and the aftermath of COVID hit them six. It's not just the financial distress of COVID and the very high inflation which succeeded it, but also it changes the habits of people. They got used to being at home more and not going out, and it takes a while to coax them back out. Even though the lockdowns were sort of ended within the year, really the after effects of COVID have continued.
Yes.
Thankfully they seem to be lifting now, but there was quite an overhang, and many institutions have had a very difficult time in the post-COVID years.
Let's talk a little bit about the new club and how it did come through those periods. But first, a little bit about the building itself, because we know there were a lot of leaks coming through, water coming through the ceiling and so on and so on. So tell us a bit about the building and what you have achieved, because it does feel to be a much more solid and secure place to be.
Well, thank you. I mean, when I got up at the AGM when I was appointed in May, I tried to be as open and transparent with members as I could be, that we had some problems. You know, the building, because of the difficulties I've just alluded to, the building had become very dilapidated.
Yeah.
The club had been running on a shoestring for a long time. The morale of the members was quite low. They were anxious about the future of the club and the direction it might be going in. So I think what I said, so I was completely sort of aware and realistic of the scale of the challenge. But as I said at the AGM, important organisations don't fail usually through lack of money. They fail because people don't care about them anymore. Mm. And I got a strong feeling, and it's just been reinforced by everything I've seen since, that the members really do care about the new club. And I've been amazed and impressed and grateful about how they've all pulled together in various ways over the last 6 months to put the club back on the right footing, which largely it is. And one of those things is we've managed to raise a substantial amount of money through various initiatives from members. The target was 150,000 in our 150th year, and we look to be well on track to achieve that. And much of that has been spent on restoring and, you know, levelling the club's finances, but carrying out a very substantial property schedule of work, which has been led by Sir Robert Wright, who's done a fantastic job. And some of the projects are big and small. So there's been, one of the biggest, for example, was refurbishing the windows, which will have cost about £25,000 by the time we're done. And then some of them at the other end are quite small, which is buying a new flag and putting it up and, you know, everything in between. But it's been very substantial, and I think that members can really feel that the club is now in a sort of loved state as opposed to a neglected state, which it had been for many years.
I'm sure that members certainly do feel that. I think at one point you said there were about 70 different items where refurbishment had been required of some sort. So that's really where all the money has gone in doing all those jobs. But can I just ask you, where's all the money come from? I often hear this from people saying, well, where have we got the money from?
Well, it's been raised almost entirely through the patronage and generosity of the members. So, you know, I was always aware that members, very, very passionate and loyal to the club, but have different circumstances and different priorities. So not everybody can contribute in the same way. So I wanted to create as much opportunity for members to do what they could as possible. And I think we've done that. So there were a range of initiatives. For example, there were some 10-year memberships, which raised about 85,000. And then there were some donations. That was nearly 50,000, of which probably the thing that people see the most is the dining room refurbishment, which was led and conceived and largely paid for by Marilyn, which is a terrific achievement. But, you know, but there are many others. Lorenzo and Mario. There's just so many people to thank. And then there were smaller donations. And then, of course, we had the gala dinner and we had the auction that was very successful. And, apart from the financial side of it, there's so many people who just give up their time. One of the things that I didn't realise until I became chair was just how much work it is to run the club. I realise it's been a busy period, but it's been nearly full-time. And not just me, you've had people like Sally Dimmer, who's been an absolute godsend and an absolute rock to me in all the things we've been trying to do. You've had Marilyn, you've had Mario, you've had Sir Robert Wright, as I've said, Ian McPherson, all sorts of people who have done terrific service to the club and continue to do so.
Yeah, and it's a very good committee now, because the committee itself is very hardworking and is very focused on completing a lot of the tasks that need to be done since you've become chairman.
Yeah. Yes, and you will continue to do so. And as I say, it's just every... I mean, I think that part of it and the focus for next year, having done everything that we've done, is to, continue improvement. And, part of that is the offering to members, because in the end what's important is that members appreciate and value the club and enjoy the time that they spend here.
What does that cover compared with other monies that you've raised in other ways?
Well, the monies that that we've raised are largely what I say on capital accounts. So it's been about repairing or just putting the finances back on a even keel, and all the backlog of building work and refurbishing work. But in terms of ongoing profit and loss account, if you like, income in and income out, our principal sources of revenue are the subscription, which accounts for about a third of our costs.
Okay.
And then the rest comes from bar, catering, dining, and certain smaller amounts of income like car parking, race table, all of which is dealt with by volunteer members, the latter case of Stephen Hodge. So, so it's about a third comes from subscription, and the rest, if you like, has got to be earned throughout the year by bar sales, restaurant, dining room sales, and so on.
Yes. The club is really quite unique in Cheltenham in that I can't imagine any other club where you've got the kind of activities that we can provide, how we can have really top-level restaurant facilities, and that people can come in any time when it's open and enjoy just relaxing and having fun.
Well, and, you know, I think it's just all the things that come together. One of the things that's been done this year, which members have really enjoyed, for example, it's one of those things you can walk past, but it's very important, is, you know, Mike Dearden's completely revamped the wine list, along with the wine group. And we now have some superb wines which members can enjoy of all different budgets, along with the excellent food which Carl produces in the kitchen, yeah, and the front of house services and the friendliness and ambiance of the place. So the whole thing has been, you know, brought up a notch. You know, small things again, like the staff wearing uniforms which were once worn by the founders when the club was formed in 1874. It's all trying to create restore
the
feeling of quality of it, yes, and fun, and that the club like this should have.
So where next? What are, you'd say, the three main areas that you're going to be looking at, or more than three? What are the main areas you're going to be looking at in the future? What do you need to do from now on?
Well, I think we're probably about, we've achieved a lot, I think. I've really been quite surprised and amazed, really, that we've managed to get through the programme that we have in 2024. It was, a very, very important year for the club, being the 150th year. But, we've done a lot, and I think we've achieved more or less everything we've set out to do, which is very pleasing. As I look forward to 2025, I think there are two main areas of focus, which, if we manage to achieve those, will really put the club on a good and solid trajectory for the next 150 years. So the first is to really concentrate on getting the membership to a level where it needs to be through recruiting and onboarding new members. I'm absolutely delighted that, Pete and Joan Chadwick have worked tirelessly in this area for many, many years and are going to step down from it at the end of the year. So I'm very grateful that Mario has agreed to take over a large part of that role, and I think that he has got a very clear vision about how to broaden the appeal of the club, to broader business people and to, sort of 50-somethings, using the assets which we've created, new website, new publicity, which is, terrific. If people would have seen Gloucestershire Live recently, the club had a very good write-up. Jane Moyle's worked, again, tirelessly in that regard, that the website's really terrific. Rich East and a team, and Marilyn and Jane, and have really done fantastic work there. So there's just so many people pulling it together. So membership, to try and get us to 300, is one of the objectives. We're sitting at about 240 now, so it's not a huge gap, but it needs to be bridged. And the other is to continue to improve our what I call operations. So that's increasingly fun and valuable offerings to members, increased efficiency, and continue to try and drive improvements in many areas of the club. And I think that will get us, that's the final part of the journey to really get the club back where it should be.
The future looks more secure now, and I'm looking forward to the next AGM, where you'll be able to tell us more about what's achieved in the meantime and where we're going from here.
Yes, I look forward to it.
So thank you very much, Dennis, for your commitment to the club and your belief in the value of the club to many of our members. So we look forward to another year of enjoying friendships, fun, and know that the new club is moving forward. So thank you very much indeed.
No, thank you, Mary. And I think I just end by saying that one of the reasons why the club's very important is that this club's been around for 150 years. these things need to be preserved, because if you allow them to fail or to slip away, you never create them again. And I think it's been here for 150 years. It continues to be very important to members. Let's keep going.
Thank you. I agree. Thank you very much indeed, Dennis.